Mr. Speaker, those people who think that coastal zone management was adopted by Jimmy Carter don't know who the President of the United States was in 1973 and 1974 when the state of Alaska had it shoved down our throat. Mr. Speaker, the gentleman from Kalifornsky doesn't seem to remember his usually very good constitutional history with regard to the powers of Congress. I could tell him a funny story about how it happens that the East River in New York State is non-navigable by act of Congress, simply because Congress was afraid of its own power to do away by non-compensatory condemnation of the United Nations building. Mr. Speaker, under Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution, there are at least four or five separate powers of Congress that can give the federal government tremendous authority in the coastal areas. The circumstances we were presented with when there was a Republican president who had just resigned and a new Republican president who had never been elected from the federal government was that we were concerned about the incursion of those powers which are arguably constitutionally there, even to the point of a taking without just compensation under the doctrine of navigation servitude, which is a tremendous power, Mr. Speaker. We were concerned about that, and we had an opportunity, if we had a state funded in state participation in coastal zone management, to make sure that we could take care of the concerns, the very frightening concerns that were expressed by members from Kodiak, by members from every coastal area that went on extensive field hearings during the Ninth Legislature in 1975. First, we had to remind them that we're a little bit better than the federal government. Do they want to deal with us, or do they want to deal with the federal government? That's what we're really doing here. This was not some kind of a thing, you don't really need us, we're not going to do anything, come get the dirty federal money and do nasty stuff, which the gentleman from Kalifornsky said. That's not what's going on here. That's not what's going on here. And if two other Republican presidents are any kind of an indication, we can guess what this Republican president will do, since clearly his policies are dictated exactly from the policies that that colleague of mine from Fairbanks are.
Representative Halford? Mr. Speaker, I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank the piccolo player from Fairbanks for his serenade.
Representative Miller?
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I'll join the majority leader in that. I enjoyed it too, because everything he said was right on target. I'll make an observation or two, Mr. Speaker, in addition to the fact that the piccolo player from Fairbanks had a better grasp of history and the presidency that was extant at the time of the CZM legislation. I might say that even in Alaska, where Jimmy Carter probably wasn't the most popular president we've had in years, people are looking back and thinking he's looking better and better and better. My forecast is, Mr. Speaker, by the time the next four-year cycle comes around, people will have had it up to here with Reaganomics and indeed the local extension of that. I'll make one further correction to the gentleman from Fairbanks behind me here, Mr. Speaker. He said that 95% of the state revenues come from the big bad oil companies. No, they don't, Mr. Speaker. Those are the people's resources that we have a right to get a fair share from. Let's don't ever think that 90% is coming from the oil companies. The 90% is coming from the people's oil resource. And we should never forget it, and we should never abuse it. And last year, we should never have given it away.
Just as a reminder to the body, we are debating amendment number 9, which says Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and it has coastal zone management. Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I support this amendment, and I'm sure my caucus will tell you that I am not a liberal Democrat. What I am doing is reacting to a situation that the national government is going to force upon the state of Alaska and trickle down, of course, to the local government and the people in that area. And when reference was made to the symbol of the Libertarian Party, the Porcupine, I guess that's about all we can do. We have a heck of a good defense, but not much of an offense against the national government.
Representative Vasca.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me expand on what my colleague from Sitka just said, if I understand what he meant by porcupine. If you look at the Federal Coastal Management Program and its intent, and figure out what consistency requirements are, you'll find out that in the OCS program, without consistency requirements that are in the coastal management program, without the consistency requirements in there, the federal government will not be compelled to listen to the state of Alaska for OCS development. That oil could be drilled in the high seas beyond 3 miles. It could be pumped out of there into large super tankers and be taken away. Presumably half of the revenues from that oil would go to the federal government. The other half would go to the oil companies. There'd be nothing for the state of Alaska except support bases if it's the Norton Sound in Nome or St. Michael's or Stebbins. If it's in the Navarin Basin, maybe St. Matthews Island, maybe St. Paul if they're lucky. If it's in the Chukchi Sea, maybe Kotzebue, except it's not a deep port harbor, but they do have an airport. The North Slope Borough is fully aware of the powers and the abilities of the federal government to circumvent what it wants done.
For that matter, the federal government could circumvent the powers of the state to give input, could circumvent the state's ability to ask for consistency requirements in the state's interest. Not just the local people, but in the state. If you read all your material from the state, the National Council of State Legislatures, you'll see there's a big argument as to how much the state of Alaska or any of the western states will be allowed to keep from their natural resources, whether it's in the form of natural resources or revenues derived from them. Without consistency requirements, without the state getting organized about writing these plans, forcing the federal government to comply with its interests, the state of Alaska will have lost a lot. The Republican gentleman from Fairbanks said that, yes, it is in the interest of the oil companies to be in the state of Alaska. Last year, Sohio gave back to its shareholders $750 million, the majority of which came from the state of Alaska. The gentleman from Petersburg said he got his share. The state of Alaska did not get that much from Sohio alone in its share. ARCO took close to $1 billion from the state of Alaska in profits. ARCO is not owned by the United States. It's a multinational corporation. 45% of that money goes to the crown, not England, but the crown in England. Princess Di has gotten rich off the state of Alaska. Exxon, over $500 million from the state of Alaska. These are private interests. They're not in the interests of the state of Alaska. Not even close. Yes, they contribute heavily to Herbie Nyakpuk running the Iditarod. Yes, they contribute heavily to Eskimo Olympics. Thank you. Yes, they contribute to the arts. But their contributions are written off on their taxes. You know, where's the contribution? You know, where's the altruistic feeling from the oil companies? It doesn't exist except to the extent that it's a tax write-off, and it makes them look good. We're looking to protecting the state of Alaska and its people in the resources that we share, especially in oil and gas. The state of Alaska has gained a lot from revenues from oil and gas. I would be the first to admit that. But the state should have an equal share in all of those revenues, all of the state, not private interests, not the oil companies. They'll get their share. You know, if we were Argentina, we'd be taxing them to the tune of 98%, which is just fine. They find it necessary to go down there and continue to drill. And you can go throughout the whole world and find out what percentage taxes the oil companies are paying
anywhere. Our tax structure is set up so that we're not setting the prices for our oil. OPEC is. Mr. Speaker, I ask that the members of this body vote to reinstate $475,000 in the budget for the Coastal Zone Management Program.
Is there further debate? House, please stand at ease.
To us. I hope we don't forget those basics. Quite often we do, I think, and get involved and wrapped up in this so-called modern civilization. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I applaud the gentleman who just spoke for a very eloquent speech. As far as I can figure, the conclusion I draw there is that this direct analogy is the sort of grievance that the people we're talking about were about control from afar, very unresponsive, dictatorial, tyrannical control, the kind of federal interference with our activities that we don't like. And the distance from Juneau to Washington, D.C. isn't that far different from the order of magnitude, the distance from Philadelphia to Westminster and London. Mr. Speaker, I really think that if we zero out CZM, if we don't pass this amendment, we're going to be in a similar situation. The federal government is very, very unpredictable. And quite honestly, getting away from all of the amusing stuff about partisan cuts, we haven't really fared very well under presidents, whether they're of your party or my party lately, Mr. Speaker. Whether it was the well-intentioned bungling of the president of my party, who's no longer there but was recently there, or the strange behavior of the two presidents of your parties that gave us their views of CZM in the first place and allowed the Congress to pass it with some kind of East Coast ethnocentrism. Mr. Speaker, we don't need to be run from afar, and the document the gentleman just read from, it really said that. And all this does is make sure that we've got a chance to have some participation in our own decisions. I also thank the same gentleman for giving us a chance to have something to eat by calling it at ease.
Is there further debate? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 9 to the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Chuckluck? Representative Chuckluck, yea to nay. Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 13 yeas, 20 nays.
House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 9. Will the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment Number 10 by Representative Mike Miller to page 41, line 7. It has to do with child assistance child care.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I move the amendment.
There is objection, Representative Miller.
Speaker, as I mentioned to some other people earlier this afternoon, there are some deductions in this current budget that are merely represent bad judgment. This amendment, Mr. Speaker, corrects a situation that without it is a deduction that is unnecessarily cruel. Mr. Speaker, this restores the governor's recommendation in the area of child care. We're talking, in a little bit more than $1 million here.
But the interesting thing is that the deduction that supposedly saved that $1 million plus really is not saving any money at all. We're just replacing daycare dollars with welfare dollars. That's the strong opinion held by the department during the subcommittee hearings and the full committee hearings on the subject. I don't think any of us heard any testimony that indicated otherwise. When you cut out daycare, the people you are cruelly punishing are in particular single women who are the head of households, usually with one or two, perhaps three children, who without the assistance with the daycare are unable to hold the jobs that they do hold. And when you take that daycare subsidy away, you're forcing them to go on welfare. There's a lot of statistical evidence that was presented to us that indicates that that you spend even more dollars in the welfare mode than you do in the, and it's been characterized as a workfare mode with daycare assistance. I say, Mr. Speaker, that it's cruel because it's not only bad economics, but it's just really bad on the individual to have to be forced from a situation where she, or in some cases he, are able to make a living, hold their head proudly, and say, hey, I'm making it on my own. Instead, that person is forced to stop working for a living, to go home with the kids and tend to them there because there just isn't anybody to take care of the children during the working days. And then the children are raised up in a welfare environment that the department in its memorandums to us also describes as very undesirable and what I describe as cruel. Mr. Speaker, I just, for the life of me, can't understand why we even considered anything less than the governor's recommended funding level, which incidentally, even if attained, does not meet the need throughout the state. Even if we funded the governor's level, there would still be waiting lists in your community, Mr. Speaker, and elsewhere in this state. There would still be waiting lists of mothers and some fathers who want to work, but they can't do it as long as they can't get just a little bit of assistance in taking care of their kids during the day. Mr. Speaker, when the subcommittee first considered this budget item, it was dropped all the way down to $4 million. And there was just outrage, absolute outrage all across the state, justifiable outrage. And your subcommittee chairman and the chairman of finance reconsidered their target, their goals, and with a little manipulation here and there, they were able to raise the ante just a little bit. But Mr. Speaker, in raising the ante from $4 million up to the current level, we've sort of made it sort of a choice between
diphtheria and spinal meningitis. I mean, it's just either alternative is rotten. What we need, Mr. Speaker, is full, no, not full funding. We're not going to get full funding, even if we adopt the figure that I'm asking for.
What we need is something approaching adequacy, which is the full amount that the governor requested. Mr. Speaker, if there's only two or three items in this whole budget that just cry out for remedy, this is certainly one of those items, and I'd urge the members to vote yes.
Representative Clarkson.
I rise to support the amendment, Mr. Speaker, and to try to give some people here a sense of the help that the daycare assistance program provides to people. And I suppose that's difficult for a number of people here. Either they're single, they don't have children, or if they have children, they're a two-adult household, so that they perhaps don't have to worry about the child care assistance program. But there are a lot of people that do have to be concerned about that program, Mr. Speaker. In Anchorage, almost 25% of the households with children are headed by a single parent. In Anchorage, that means one out of four households that has kids has a single parent. Now, what is that single parent going to do? If they want to work, they're going to have to pay for child care out of their employment. The vast majority of those single parents are women. The statistics show that those women typically work in employment that's marginal in terms of the income they earn from it. Therefore, it's not economically feasible for them to pay for the child care out of their employment and still have enough money to live. That's what the child care assistance program is for. Mr. Speaker, the municipality of Anchorage is getting 100 new family applications a month. 100 new ones a month. There are 400 families on the waiting list right now. They estimate that a third, again, as many in Anchorage don't even bother to get on the waiting list. If you assume that that's 1.5 kids per family, that's 600 kids on the waiting list, and another couple of hundred kids that their parents don't even bother to put them on the waiting list. Those are people that need the child care assistance program so that they can go to work. It makes a whole lot of sense to me to put whatever money you can into that child care assistance program so that those folks don't have to stay on welfare. Mr. Speaker, that situation, waiting lists, is not unique just to Anchorage. There are waiting lists right now in Bethel, Cordova, Fairbanks, Juneau, Kenai, Kotzebue, Nome, and Seward. Waiting lists for people to get on the child care assistance program. I have some statistics about Juneau now, Mr. Speaker. There are 123 families receiving daycare assistance now. Of those, 93% of them are single women. Only 19 of those women receive child support. Now, one of the arguments against this legislation or this amendment or the idea of adequately funding child care assistance is, let's put the money into child support enforcement. Well, it doesn't work. I have done literally hundreds of divorces and child support enforcement cases, and the typical amount of money you get in the child support enforcement case is $50 to $100 a kid a month. That is not an alternative to child care assistance, and it can't seriously be argued to be an alternative. Child support enforcement is important. It ought to be funded, too. It's not an alternative. Another figure I think that's important, of those 123 families in Juneau that are receiving child care assistance, only one of them, one out of 123, is qualified for food stamps or other public assistance programs. This program keeps people off public assistance. There's no better way to spend state money than to accomplish that. We expanded this program last year. It has had a tremendous beneficial impact, but we'll go right back to where we were before if you don't adopt this amendment and if you don't cover the people on those waiting lists so that they can get off welfare and get to work. I support the amendment.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, a couple of months ago there were a couple of women from the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce that came down to talk to me about what we were doing in Juneau, and they had heard that some of us were complaining about the proposed underfunding of the daycare program, and they wanted to know why I was so interested in having the state take care of people's kids. And they admitted that they didn't know what the Municipal Daycare Assistance Program was after they discovered that, that as Mr. Clarkson has very well pointed out, that there are actually some possible economic benefits to the state and to the rest of the economy if we continue to fund this program. They had a different idea about whether or not they ought to support it. I think a lot of people are in that situation. I think that once people really understand what this program does for people, not just the people on the program, but for everybody else, I think that you begin to see more and more support for it. And I think that we should see that today.
Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 10 to the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 12 yeas, 21 nays.
The House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 10. Will the clerk please read Amendment Number 11? It's been brought to my attention that some of the Xerox material that's being placed on the member's desk does not have the amendment number. If you could get the number, place it on the amendment before you Xerox, it would be very helpful. Would the clerk please read Amendment Number 11?
Amendment Number 11 by Representative Cotton to page 5, line 19, has to do with social services aging grants.
Representative Cotton?
Speaker, I move the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Cotton?
Speaker, these aging grants combined with federal funds to fund at least three basic programs, community service programs, and there's a long list of different types of community service programs, including nutrition, volunteer, housing, home health and homemaker, and several others. In addition, pilot project grants and employment services are offered out of these aging grant funds. In my community, there's we have a senior citizen center. There's some housing, and
there's several of the people that are senior citizens in the community work there, and their paychecks are funded by these aging grants. There are a lot of volunteers that do some part-time work there without any compensation, and then there are some others who is again mostly senior citizens who work on a part-time basis. And they are paid, and many times it's their only form of income. There was I've received a lot of telegrams and other communications from people who are very concerned about this, very concerned about a reduction in service to not only the Chugiak Senior Citizens Center, but other senior centers around the state. The reduction here, it's hard to determine exactly where the money would come from. As far as an example, I've got a list here of all the different recipients of grants last year. I can't tell you right now that Chugiak Senior Citizen Center is going to lose X number of dollars because it will be allocated by the department, but they'll certainly most likely receive a reduction just like everybody else. And I'm very concerned about that, and so are the people in my community.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, today I received a public opinion message. I'd just like to read part of it from one of the people that's really been interested in this program from Fairbanks, Doris Southall. Says, please approve the original funding for the Older Alaskan Commission to support services for the elderly. Federal cuts are already showing decrease in services to the elderly. Funds are needed to continue the program, especially the nutrition program and transportation for medical appointments. Your support is needed. Mr. Speaker, why is it that we're cutting the nutrition program for the elderly? Why is it we're cutting the transportation for medical appointments for the elderly? Why is it we can't afford this $1 million when we were able to afford hundreds of millions of dollars in oil tax giveaways?
Representative Chuckluck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Actually, in my subcommittee, we did not decrease their funding level. In fact, we maintained the fiscal year 82 funding level. The only thing we did not include in that is the federal portion. Now, it's up to the agency to apply for that remaining fund. That which appears that we have taken out $761,000. And so if they make an application to the federal budget impact fund, there's a possibility they can receive these funds.
Is there further debate? Representative Cotton?
Well, so far there's no such thing as a federal budget cut impact fund.
Representative Clarkson?
Mr. Speaker, I don't want to draw this out. I just want to highlight some of the last comments with regard to federal budget cuts. There was a lot of rhetoric around this body last year and early this year about picking up federal budget cuts. We've now seen what the Finance Committee has done with regard to federal budget cuts, and they've done almost nothing. Whether that's in the area of the Department of Administration, whether it's Health and Social Services, any other area of the budget, there have been tremendous federal cuts that have been cutting people off of programs left and right in this state, and there's been almost no effort in this budget to address those federal budget cuts. True in this budget, it's true in a lot of other budgets, and I just want people to think about that when you talk about the fact we're not cutting state money or whatever the statement was. The fact is that what we're deciding to do is not pick up money that the federal government is taking out of needed programs.
Representative Chuckluck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to correct the last speaker. We are making an effort to take over some federal funding. We do have a bill that's floating around at this time, and hopefully once we determine what the total figure will be, we will address the federal cuts.
Representative Duncan? House, please stand at ease. Is there further debate on Amendment Number 11? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 11 to the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The vote says 11 yeas, 21 nays.
So the House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 11. Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment Number 12 by Representative Gardner. Page 19, line 6, from the Department of Health and Social Services, Human Services, quite a few others.
Representative Gardner? Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to adopt an amendment number 12. There is objection. Representative Gardner? Mr. Speaker, this amendment maybe is a little different than some of the previous ones offered. It does provide an occasion for the members of the body to lower the budget by deleting some increases in appropriations. And to some sense, I think it's a symbolic amendment because personally, I don't really have a problem with the goals that I think this
these items of appropriation for some $2.7 million is trying to accomplish in Northwest Alaska. But what I do have a problem with is sort of the unfair allocation of the cuts that has been brought by the Finance Committee before the body here. We have sort of a special occasion here. The Manilik Association is, according to their literature, a quasi-private nonprofit corporation in Northwest Alaska that contracts with the state for various kinds of services. And on the amendment, you can see what those services are. And basically, providing an experimental occasion to function as a regional government through the format of a nonprofit association. And that might not be a bad idea as an experiment, but I don't think that we should kid ourselves that it isn't government and it isn't state employees in the same sense that any other state employees are provided. And the amendment that was adopted by this body earlier to provide state employee cost of living increases and at the same time cut numbers of employees would, of course, not affect this section because it is a nonprofit association. And I would advise members of this body, if they want to start some program in their district, in the future they'd probably be a lot smarter to put operational increases in their budget in the format of a nonprofit association so that they will not be subject to the operational cuts in government that other programs in other areas are. People in the Southeast region with the Southeast Regional Healthcare Association have talked to me, along with I think other members representing the Southeast area and other legislators on the Finance Committee, about the healthcare needs and the federal cutbacks they're facing. And these are the same problems that are faced in the northwest area of the state. But we find two separate conclusions reached by the Finance Committee and now proposed before this body. One is a lot of cuts for health and social service programs in many areas of the state. But in the northwest area of the state, because we have a nonprofit association and other political factors supporting that association, we find that last year their budget was $2,048,000. This year we find their budget is $2,719,000. That's a 35% increase, while everybody else is going along with the cuts. And of course, we've heard a lot of eloquent statements by the finance chairman and others about how we cannot have the state supporting the economy in our area, and we should be concerned about the fact that our children may have to look to the state government for jobs and other such eloquent statements. Of course, it does bring into question when we're not able to apply this to the area that we ourselves represent. Let's take another example that appears down in this line item that we spoke about earlier that the Judiciary Chair and other members failed to answer. Domestic violence. Last year, the Manilik Association received $137,000. This year,
under this budget that's before us, they're receiving $179,000 for their domestic violence program. That's a 22% increase. Now, we have all the other programs in every other area of the state facing a 23% decrease. And this has not been explained other than it happens to be in the finance chairman's district, which after 10 years I figure is a pretty good explanation to me anyway. But I do think it does merit some concern as to the symbolism of this budget and the statements that have been represented here by the finance chairman and others that we have to make these cuts. And if we have to make these cuts, I think that fairness and equity dictate that we try to make these cuts throughout all areas of the state, not in other people's areas, and fail to recognize the same problems of our own. Because if we're truly concerned about the effect of state spending on our district and the creation of state jobs and the effect it will have on our children, then we ought to be concerned about it in our own district. But I do think this is also brings up the additional problem that I spoke earlier about in this body, that we are targeting only on the increases in government that are due to the operational expenditures of government, and somehow pretending that expenditures of government that are due to nonprofit associations and capital expenditures are somehow other than that. But as we see here, these nonprofit associations will come back year after year and increase the operational expenditures of government. So while I don't expect anybody in the coalition to vote for this cut as they have for the others, I think they might want to think about the fairness and the equity of providing cuts to the identical programs in every other area of the state while ignoring that and increasing the state government spending and the bureaucracy in Northwest Alaska, and then voting to cut employees in other areas of the state.
Representative Adams.
Thank you. I thank the comments from the junior from Ketchikan. And on the amendment that he had made, the Homemaker Service did take a 50% cut. Their requested was for $144,000. We brought them down to only $72,000. And we had cuts along. The one he is looking at is the domestic violence. They requested $255,000. They got approximately 30% cut from that, same as anybody else, brought them down to 178.5. He made another statement that last year they received 137, which was the lowest of any domestic violence throughout the state. One of the things that we do is we take care of our statistics within the Kotzebue Women's Crisis Project. We had in our women's shelters for 6 months 204. In the shelters, in the children in the shelters, 156. But we make sure up there in the Northwest area, the money that the government put to these particular contracts, it's spent on its intention. We don't go outside the programs. We spend it what the state has contracted with this nonprofit to do. And I urge members to vote no on this.
Representative Clarkson?
I'd like to ask the chair of the finance, or the chair of the Judiciary Committee, whether or not her investigation that she discussed before did any sort of analysis of the Manila Kotzebue program and what the findings were. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clarkson?
We assume then that she didn't do that, since she's not rising to answer the question. Mr. Speaker, I'll yield now that she's on her feet.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was almost asleep, but I knew that Representative Clarkson would get my attention. Just so happens that it wasn't necessary for our subcommittee to investigate that particular part of the budget because it comes under the social services budget, not public protection and justice. Thank you.
Representative Claussen? You wish to yield to Representative Brown?
For a moment.
Sure. Representative Brown?
Speaker, I'll yield back the floor to Mr. Claussen in a moment, but that sounds just about as logical as people in the administration and in your caucus and over in the Senate side pretending that operating budget is capital budget and capital budget is operating budget. You know, if a toad is a toad, call it a toad. You know, if you're going to do an investigation of toads, investigate all toads. Don't pretend that one is a giraffe and use that as an excuse for not investigating, even if it's the finance chairman's giraffe.
Representative Claussen?
Mr. Speaker, I really wish I had earlier today written down the quotation from the finance chairman, because as the member from Ketchikan said, he made a very eloquent statement about the need to wean citizens from government programs, and I think that in some cases that's an admirable goal. But to take a phrase from the majority leader, who's used this phrase many, many times in addressing amendments, I think in order to achieve that goal, we ought to start now, and we ought to start at home, and we ought to adopt this amendment. Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 12 to the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 13 yeas, 21 nays.
So the House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 12. Will the clerk please read the next amendment? Representative Buckhole?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Now that we have failed to adopt this amendment number 12, I'd just like to say that perhaps the finance chairman has a motto which says, charity begins at home.
Clerk, please read the next. Representative Claussen?
Mr. Speaker, I don't want to prolong this, but there was some items being passed back and forth on the floor, and there is a reason why members should not communicate during the votes, and I think it's a very important tradition to maintain. And while I realize that things are getting pretty spacey here, I'd ask the Speaker to try to control the traffic here during the votes.
Thank you, Representative Claussen, for bringing that to my attention. You're absolutely correct. We should constrain ourselves during the vote. And minimize communication. Representative Brown?
Mr. Speaker, also, if anybody's going to throw objects, please make them soft ones with no sharp corners.
Thank you, Representative Brown. Clerk, please read the next amendment.
This amendment number 13 by Representative Sam Cotton. It's a four-page amendment to page 35, line 5.
Representative Cotton?
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Cotton?
Mr. Speaker, there's one area of government, especially in my district. Freezes and nobody can get out of their driveways. People have accidents on the way to work. There's the proverbial pothole that every politician ever ran for office has promised to fix. These things don't get done if we cut the maintenance and operation budget of the Department of Highways in my district about 13.7%. Other areas of the state even worse. I think this is not a good place to begin cutting. I think that a lot of government programs only benefit a few people or only a few people notice. This is one that everybody notices. I think it's it has to do with whether or not we're going to be safe on the highways, or whether it's going to be convenient for us to be able to get to work, whether the snow's been plowed or whether the gravel's been put on the ice. And I think it's just the absolute last place that we ought to start cutting back on government service.
Representative Hurlburt.
Hi, Mr. Speaker. We're just sitting here commenting about this thing. And he said it gets done if you, it won't get done if you cut them. We're not sure it gets done even if you don't cut them.
Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is, I think, one of the more important budget amendments being offered. The for some reason, the Department of Transportation Budget Subcommittee arbitrarily used last year's numbers for all these maintenance. Said that the condition the roads were in last year is good enough, I guess. Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't think the condition the roads is in is good enough. I don't think the condition that the, of the North Slope Hall Road, the Dalton Highway, I don't think that was adequate. Mr. Speaker, to hold the maintenance of the Dalton Highway at $5.8 million is not adequate. I think even this amendment doesn't go far enough, but this at least brings it up to the governor's amended level of $6.5 million for maintenance of the Dalton Highway. Mr. Speaker, in the interior, we've had a real severe problem with the maintenance of the highways, with the maintenance of the interior airports and facilities. I don't think that that they've been adequately funded in the past. Last year, I made the finance chairman fairly angry when I moved a similar amendment in the finance committee that was adopted to increase the amount of money for maintenance and operations of the roads, the airports, and the other facilities. Mr. Speaker, we've all gotten a lot of letters from truckers on the Dalton Highway who said the road maintenance on that road is not adequate. And for some reason, the Finance Committee has adopted a budget that is number for number the same as last year. To say that there's no increased costs of maintenance, Mr. Speaker, there are increased costs of maintenance on the existing roads, and there are new road mileages being added every year. And for that reason, I strongly urge that we adopt these increases to cover the basic maintenance of our roads.
Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 13 to the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 13 yeas, 21 nays.
House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 13. Will the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment Number 14 by Representative Rogers. Page 30, after line 13, it's in the Department of Natural Resources, Agriculture Management, State Fairs.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent to the adoption of the amendment. Okay.
There is objection. I believe the amendment is on member's desk. Representative.
Somewhere. Mr. Speaker, this amendment would add $333,100 for the state fairs program. We've passed legislation in the past that would that funds the Tanana Valley State Fair, the Palmer Fair, the Ninilchik Fair, host of other fairs around the state. The funding is a matching fund basis, and each of the fairs, in other words, has to put up a matching amount to what the state's putting up. The maximum any single fair gets is $75,000. Most of them are in the $10,000 to $30,000 range, with the exception of the two big fairs, the Tanana Valley Fair and the Palmer Alaska State Fair. Mr. Speaker, these fairs are an opportunity for people in our agriculture industry to display what's going on. It's an opportunity for other people in other industries in this state to have an opportunity to meet with people to show them their wares. I know in the Fairbanks area, the Tanana Valley Fair is attended by virtually everyone who lives in the area. Out of this amount, $75,000, would go to the Tanana Valley Fair. At the insistence of the Anchorage delegation 2 years ago, 3 years ago, a couple of other programs, the Fur Rendezvous is also funded with out of this program, and I think that's also a valuable function for the citizens of the Anchorage area. I think this is an opportunity to correct one of the bigger mistakes made by the Finance Committee. It's not a lot of money, $333,000 in the overall scheme of things. I suppose those who think that giving away oil tax money is a bigger priority than state fairs can vote against this amendment, but I would strongly urge that people vote for the amendment and reinstate the funding for the state fairs.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this is an area that has had support in the state legislature and the territorial legislature to some degree and in some manner for 50 years. Mr. Speaker, maybe one of the advantages that the territorial legislature had back in those years is that they didn't have the oil companies around to tell them how to vote. It is really ludicrous to remove this funding. This is the oldest single area of support of agricultural related activities in the state of Alaska. And Mr. Speaker, I find absolutely no rational justification for taking it out, except maybe that somebody thinks it's going to offend Ohio.
Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to support the state fair. You know, the state fair is an old American tradition. It is something that people look forward to during harvest time. It's something that our people, I have always looked forward to, a state fair wherever I am. And I know that in the state of Alaska, our people look forward to the state fairs that take place in the fall. And I am appalled that we are cutting down the state fair program. The state fair program has, from the time that I have come here to the legislature, been working out its problems. At first, they used to come, and I know because I was on the Finance Committee, where we had to reckon with the problem. Each of the state fair program came and asked the legislators to support their specific programs. They used to vie for money, because that was the only way they knew how to get money from the legislature. Finally, they decided that they could work together and ask for full funding for all the programs so that they don't have to each one come and fight for their money. So that's how it came about that the state fairs got their funding in a lump sum. And I just hate to see that this program is going out the window because it is, like I said, an old American tradition. I think we'll all look forward to that, and we do feel that it merits support. I know that there will be some support coming from this body if we were even given the chance to do it, and I hope that with this amendment, I will see green lights on the board.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, Representative Cotton?
Mr. Speaker, it should be pointed out that there's absolutely, definitely, no money in this for world fairs, just state fairs.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 14 to the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill Number 666? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The vote shows 11 yeas, 22 nays.
So the House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 14. Will the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment number 15 by Representative Mike Miller and Representative Pappy Moss, page 27, line 9, to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, tourism positions.
This amendment should be on everyone's desk. Representative Miller. House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Stand at ease for just another moment. Please come back to order. Representative Miller, I apologize for recognizing you and then recognizing someone else before we had an opportunity to speak who called in at ease. I'll watch that a little closer in the future. You have the floor, sir.
Mr. Speaker, it worked out fine because I didn't have my act together until right now anyway. So now I'm good for at least 3 hours, so I thank you for that. Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment.
There is objection, Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, we've heard any number of times over the past few weeks and several times even tonight, today, people talking about we can't be so totally dependent on big oil. We've got to get, you know, we've got to wean ourselves away from, you know, the big bad oil companies or the wonderful oil companies, whichever happens to be your persuasion. Mr. Speaker, one of the easiest, best, fastest, most economical ways to bring dollars into a region, a state, whatever, with the least amount of grief to the people that live there, the least amount of pollution, the least amount of infrastructure, is through tourism. Last year, we took a pretty strong leap forward in that area. For the first time, Alaska got into the big leagues in tourism. We took, you know, a good healthy step forward. Now this year, we're taking a step back. And the incredible thing about it is, Mr. Speaker, we're pulling our salesmen out of the field in a year when we know we need the bucks more than ever before. We always talk about, you know, the state should be run like a business. An intelligent business does not take one of its best products, one of its big dollar makers, and cut back in that area when it gets into trouble, when you start having declining revenues. To the contrary, if you've got a winner, you maximize that winner. So what are we doing? We're cutting back about 25, slightly less perhaps, percent in the number of dollars we're investing in tourism. Mr. Speaker, in a very real and accurate and demonstrable sense, and I mean demonstrable, you can buy tourist dollars. It's been proven all over the world countless times. And Alaska is in a very favorable position right now to bring in huge returns for a relatively small investment. Every other state in the union, just about, there may have been some small exceptions, I'm not sure, but every one that I heard about, and being a travel writer and being associated with the travel industry, I hear about a lot of them. The other states of this U.S. were losing tourists and tourist dollars last year and the year before. But because of intensified sales work, because of intensified investment in this industry called tourism, Alaska was actually recording gains when everybody else was recording losses. And that even includes some of the other big leaguers like Hawaii, Mexico, other destinations like that. So what are we doing, Mr. Speaker? At a time when we've got a good thing going, when we've got a winner, when we've got a demonstrated product that is attracting people, when we've got money coming in that we can count on, and we have been able to count on it because it's just been demonstrated. You look at a chart, and Alaska's tourist dollar increase is just, you know, goes right up the chart. The people who are handling our tourist promotion, both the industry and the state government, are doing it very well indeed. It's the envy, the absolute envy of at least 49 other states. And so what do? We're going to cut back $1 million or so. Just doesn't make a bit of sense at all. Doesn't make a bit of sense when we're talking about problems in the seafood industry and perhaps a loss in dollars there while the hysteria dies down over the salmon scare. When we're certainly looking at losses in the petroleum industry. When the timber industry has been as sick as it's ever been. We're pulling back bucks. We're pulling back salesmen. We're pulling back effort in the easiest dollar-producing area that exists in the business and industrial area. It's just absolute financial lunacy, Mr. Speaker, for us to be doing this. This program, or this allocation level that is suggested in the amendment, is just consistent with what the request was. It doesn't go beyond that. It just makes sense. And for people who want to give more than just lip service to a real diversified economy in Alaska, this is certainly a vote that should be yes.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to speak in favor of the amendment that's been offered here. I feel very strongly that this cutback in the tourism program is a mistake, Mr. Speaker. We've got a good thing going, as Representative Miller has pointed out. It's a good example, Mr. Speaker, where we've got private industry and government working together to provide a very basic industry in this state. A program that started several years ago has been developing, and in this past year, Mr. Speaker, 62 firms in the private sector have helped contribute to that marketing program that we're now saying we're going to cut back on. They've contributed to the extent of about $750,000 of private dollars to match along with the government dollars that are being spent to develop that very basic industry. Mr. Speaker, we've seen nothing but good results, tremendously good results from the investment that the state and the investment the private industry has made into tourism. And we look at those good results, and what do we decide to do? We decide to cut back. We decide it's time that we cut that program back, stop spending those dollars, and stop promoting tourism. Mr. Speaker, in 1977, about 390,000 tourists visited Alaska. As a result of the marketing program that we've undertaken over the past several years, that number grew to 600,000 in 1980. We're expecting 700,000 visitors in 1982. And by the year 1985, if we continue the very energetic program that we've been on for the past several years, we can expect something like 1 million visitors to the state of Alaska. Mr. Speaker, what's that 1 million visitors translate into, or what do the 700,000 that's going to visit Alaska in 1982 translate into? Mr. Speaker, it translates into jobs for the people of this state. It translates into jobs for the people of this state. We're going to be putting a lot of people to work. It's estimated that this year alone, there will be about 10,900, almost 11,000 jobs will result from tourism in this state this year. Mr. Speaker, when we see economies going down elsewhere in the United States, it's not a time for us to cut back and do the same thing to ours. 11,000 jobs, Mr. Speaker, if we continue the energetic program that we've had, and that number will continue to go up year after year after year. And not only does it bring jobs or create jobs, but it brings some money. Mr. Speaker, it's estimated that this year, 1982, the visitors to the state of Alaska will spend $300 million. They'll spend $300 million within the state of Alaska. Speaker, if you look at those figures, if you look at what's happened, the track record over the past 4 or 5 years in tourism, it just doesn't make any sense at all. It doesn't make any sense at all to try to save $1 million when you can be making $300 million. I don't understand it, Mr. Speaker. I'd urge you yes vote on the amendment.
Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just following up briefly on the last comments, I think it also translates into about 1 million very unhappy people when they get up here and find out that because of some of the environmental laws, they can't even go look at the whales. But in addition to that, Mr. Speaker, I would like to call the House on committee substitute for House Bill 666.
There is a call on the House. Without objection, we'll continue debate. Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Southeast Alaska, for all practical purposes, could be called a depressed area. Right now in Southeast Alaska, we have a very difficult time in relation with the fisheries, the salmon industry, and in my hometown, Sitka, the pulp industry is so soft that they had to terminate 8 people in the administration of ALP and then turn around and laid off 65 people. About the only thing that is left in Southeast Alaska would be tourism. In the Juneau Empire, I notice here that it says the ferries set for a record. Marine Highway gears up for tourist season. But at the same time, I look further at the budget and the Marine Highway, and I see problems there. Mr. Speaker, tourism is about all that we can depend on in the next year or two in relation with Southeast Alaska, unless we can prove some other markets.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, the representative from Kalifanski made a reference to some unhappy people because they weren't going to get to see some whales. As a matter of fact, there's lots of places they can see some whales. Some of us don't think the restrictions are as strong as they should be in that area. But as a matter of fact, be that as it may, the statistics that are kept on the Alaska tourists, and they are extensive and they are accurate, indicate that we have one of the highest satisfaction rates in the United States for people visiting any destination. So whether they get to see a whale off Kalifanski Island or wherever, I'm not sure, but it's a demonstrably successful product, and it's just absolutely insane to be cut it back. I think I made one misstatement a second ago, Mr. Speaker. I think I indicated that the amount that was requested in the amendment was the governor's requested figure. Actually, even this is a cut down version. This is the governor's amended figure. So originally he was asking for even more than this. We're not giving him, approving at a level that we really should be approving at. If we approve this amendment, we'll be approving at the lower recommended revised figure by the governor, and it just makes nothing but sense.
Representative Moss. House, please stand at ease. I'd like to remind the members that we are under a call. Order. Before the at ease, we were under debate on amendment number 15. Is there further debate? Is there further debate? Representative Rogers?
Well, Mr. Speaker, since we're sort of blocked on this bill, I'd like to bring up the reconsideration of Senate Bill 322.
I believe, Representative Rogers, that Representative Sutcliffe brought that up this morning, and it's moved to the end of the day's calendar. Okay. And Representative, I believe Representative O'Connell is just about to lift the call. Representative O'Connell? Call has been lifted. Are you ready for the question, Representative?
Mr. Speaker, I call the House.
House, please stand at ease. We have before us amendment number 15. Are you ready for the question? Mr. Sergeant of Arms, has a call been satisfied? Call has been satisfied. Question is, shall the House adopt amendment number 15 to the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 12 yeas, 23 nays.
So the House has failed to adopt amendment number 15. Will the clerk please read the next amendment? Representative O'Connell.
Mr. Speaker, I call the House on committee substitute for House Bill 666.
There is a call of the House. Representative Brown, did you wish the floor?
Mr. Speaker, are there any amendments on the clerk's desk other than amendments sponsored by members of the Democratic Caucus? I mean, what is your understanding? You don't have to check.
I don't think so.
Okay. Mr. Speaker, unless there is an objection from one of the other sponsors of the various amendments that are remaining, it's my understanding that the members of my caucus wish to leave instruct the clerk to leave the amendments on the desk, but that those will be amendments which will be offered tomorrow on reconsideration on motions to return from third to second reading, so that we will still have an opportunity to debate those matters and have votes on them. But at this time, unless there's some other signal here for those sponsors and for my amendments, I would ask that they be held on the clerk's desk for that purpose rather than considered to be amendments on second reading at this time.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Does the clerk have any other amendments besides those indicated by Representative Brown?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Halford?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 666, Finance, be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? There is objection. The question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666, amended House, be advanced from second to third reading? Representative Vasca.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I object because we do have another 15 amendments, and there are several specific ones that I will be introducing tomorrow on reconsideration. They will be dealing with bulk fuel storage, rural development grants, and the subsistence division in the Department of Fish and Game's budget. Additionally, there are other amendments that will come before us. The process as we know it will not allow any of the amendments to go through, but I think every member here on the floor knows that process. I object to the motion for advancing CSHB 666 to third reading, because I do think those amendments are important, and the amendments we've been proposing up to now have been important. They've been, the amendments I've been speaking on have been especially important to rural Alaska, and I think some of the programs that have been cut or cut out are important to the development of rural Alaska and involving people in that process. I remove my objection.
Is there further objection to the Representative O'Connell? House, please stand at ease. We are under the call of the House.
Speaker, I object to the motion.
There is objection. Mr. Sergeant-at-Arms, has the call been satisfied? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666, amended House, be advanced from second to third reading? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll.
Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Freeman from no to yes. Representative Cotton. Representative Miller. Representative Brown. Representative Moss. Representative Rogers. President Vasca. President Buchholz. Representative Grusendorf. Any other members wish to change the vote? Clerk may take the roll. Fred. Representative Zaroff from no to yes. Representative Duncan. Representative Duncan from no to yes.
Representative Gardner? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 34 yeas, 1 nay.
So the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666, amended House, has advanced from second to third reading.
Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute the House Bill number 666, Finance, amended House, entitled, An Act Appropriating for the Operating Expenses of the State Government and Providing for an Effective Date.
Is there debate? Are you ready, Representative Halford?
Mr. Speaker, there were a number of things throughout the amendments that I think just should be brought up. I'll try and do it as short as I can. Question of local taxes, the combination of all the programs that go to local governments are increased in this budget. Question of categories in general fund funding, law, education, HESS, labor, courts, U of A, and public safety are increased. HESS and labor are not increased as much as the federal reductions, however, but they do show increases. Reductions in DNR, fish and game, and legislature are the largest areas of reduction. I think the increases are consistent with the priorities of the coalition in doing something about violent crime, law enforcement, prosecution and courts, education and University of Alaska, HESS and labor. I think all those areas show indications of an effort on the part of the majority to try and do as well as possibly could be done with the limited resources available. The question has been brought up as to whether it really is a 1-6 budget. In the former Speaker of this body mentioned a shell game. In the FY81 appropriation summary, when he was the presiding officer of this body, I'd just like to go through the shell game that was played in that year. That year, the operating budget was 1-2, new legislation was $314 million, capital was $374 million, loan funds were $669, the total appropriations was $2.589. Then there were other special appropriations of 1385. If you take out the appropriations in the permanent fund and the appropriation to the rainy day fund, there was over $400 million of off-budget appropriations. That also included $41.9 million in pay raises. I think the shell game that was played under that organization is substantially different than any charges of a shell game under this organization. And by the way, that same organization passed appropriations for things like a cat neutering clinic, elevated walkway to the court building, barley to train the bison that they really wanted to eat barley, and whalebone gathering. In the 12 years that Jay Hogan has been in legislative finance, he said he has never seen any organization in this legislature meet their budget goal as far as dollars and time. This organization has done it. And I think the Finance Committee and the Finance Chairman particularly are to be congratulated. Thank you.
Representative Brown?
Mr. Speaker, knowing the Director of the Legislative Finance Division as I do, I'm sure he's cautious enough to make sure that any quote he used could not be construed as favoring anybody in any legislature at any time or opposing them particularly. So I must assume the final conclusion following the quote with regard to what has or has not happened with regard to the budget was the conclusion of the majority leader and not a continuation of the quote.
Mr. Speaker, I have never understood the argument that present and future sin is justified by past sin, no matter whose sin it was. It's a confession of sin. I appreciate the confession. Mr. Speaker, confession is good for the soul, since we had another confession by a member of your caucus earlier this evening, which was very, very illuminating. I'm considering making sure that since I have the office that's closest to the House floor here and I can provide conveniences for people, that if any member of your caucus is not quite sure how to vote on any amendments tomorrow, my staff would be pleased to get them in touch with the corporate headquarters of any oil company they'd like to
contact, as long as they'll charge the phone call either to the oil company or to their own office phones.
Representative Halford. Is there further debate? Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I didn't think we were going to bring up what was in previous year's budgets, but I'll bring our list tomorrow of a couple of things like Alaska 1984 and a few other things that this coalition funded in last year's budget tomorrow.
Before we vote on the final passage, I'd like to ask members to keep on their desks amendments 16 through 36. It'd be very helpful tomorrow in starting off at 10 a.m. Also, if you would retain the your copy of the bill and any of the backup material, I would really appreciate it.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, before we have a vote in third reading, may I inquire to you what I think was the understanding that you communicated during the last at ease, if we follow the procedure we have now?
It's my understanding. I assume that since the bill will be reconsidered and considered, that we don't bring up reconsideration first thing tomorrow morning, you will. So the reconsideration of the budget may be actually before the calendar at your behest, if not at ours.
I believe that's what I said, Representative Brown. Possible I'd like to deal with the budget first. However, that's subject to change on our part between now and tomorrow morning, and perhaps you may want to think about it as well over the evening. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666, amended House, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Yes, 22 yeas, 13 nays.
The Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666, amended House, has passed the House. Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move the effective date clock.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt the effective date clause for the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666, amended House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote?
Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Zaroff? Representative Zaroff from no to yes. Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 35 yeas, no nays.
So the effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give notice of reconsideration of my vote on committee substitute for House Bill 666, finance amended.
Notice of reconsideration has been given by Representative Rogers on his vote for Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 666, amended House. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Citation honoring Mat-Su Valley Special Olympic winners.
Mr. Speaker.
The loans bill that was brought up under reconsideration is the next item on the calendar, I believe.
Okay. I believe that's correct.
That would be Senate Bill 322.
Right.
Can I call it out at this point? Just as soon as you read the bill. Will the clerk please read the bill for the House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 322, Finance Amended House.
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute Senate Bill 322, Finance Amended House, entitled An Act Making Appropriations for Various State Loan and Grant Programs and Providing for an Effective Date.
Representative Meekins. There is a call on the House. While we're satisfying the call, unless there's objection, we can continue debate. Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent we return to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment.
There is objection. Will the clerk please read the amendment?
Two amendments, Mr. Speaker. The first one by Representative Sutcliffe.
Be by Representative Rogers. Which amendment are you moving, Representative?
The one by Representative Rogers. But if Mr. Sutcliffe was up first, I'd withdraw my motion and allow him to do his first.
Without objection, Representative Rogers will withdraw his motion to move from third to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment. Representative Sutcliffe.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had given a great deal of thought to the amendment, and I thought it was an appropriate amendment, but the deeper I look into the whole loan bill and the fact that it seems like it's a foregone conclusion that this bill is going to pass the House, and this feeling is adamantly opposed to as I do, I would just as soon not be a part of any attempt to try to clean up to what to me is a miserable bill. So I would ask unanimous consent that I remove my amendment be removed.
Is there objection? Hearing none, Representative Sutcliffe. Representative Sutcliffe's amendment is withdrawn. Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent we return to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment.
There is objection. Will the clerk please read the amendment to be amendment number two?
Amendment number two by Representative Rogers. Page 2, after line 27, insert new section 16.
Representative Rogers, is this on the member's desk?
No, it is not.
Okay, please read the amendment.
Star Sec 16. The sum of $89,200 is appropriated from the general fund to the Department of Education, Alaska State Library, for televised coverage of the remainder of the 1982 session of the legislature.
Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What I'm doing here is piggybacking on an appropriation bill. I'll admit it right off so that nobody has to get up and say that. But Mr. Speaker, we have a situation here that, according to the press, your coalition is thinking about not continuing the funding for the Capital News Service. Mr. Speaker, that funding is not a substantial amount of money. $89,000 is being proposed here to continue this through the amount of the session that's been funded for the legislative per diem and other costs of the legislature. Mr. Speaker, the situation is that televised coverage will run out later this week unless some supplemental funding is approved. And Mr. Speaker, I think it's very important that this legislature continue the televised coverage so that the people back home have an opportunity to see what's going on. If you look at what's been happening in the committees in recent weeks, there's been a lot of committee action, which means, Mr. Speaker, there's going to be a lot of floor action in the remaining 3 to 4 weeks, 5 weeks, however long it may be, of this session. And I think that some of the most important decisions are going to be made during that period. And without the opportunity
for the people to see what's going on, a lot of people are going to miss what's going on in this legislature during the most critical period. Mr. Speaker, I've had some problems with the format of the news service this year. I would have preferred the half-hour format, but I do believe more people are having an opportunity to see what's going on in Juneau. And I think it's critical that the people have an opportunity to see what's going on through the news medium that's most used by the members of the public, through the television. Mr. Speaker, this appropriation would cover an extension of up to 30 days at the same per-day cost as the existing contract. It would cover some additional production costs for gavel-to-gavel coverage of the morning floor sessions of the legislature to all parts of Alaska, as is now being done or has been done to the city of Juneau. And that would cover the production costs. The cost for the extension is $64,000, gavel-to-gavel coverage an additional $25,000, a total of $89,000. I'm moving on this bill, Mr. Speaker, because I do believe this piece of legislation will be passing the legislature in a fairly reasonable amount of time, and that the funding may come out the fastest of any existing opportunity we have. If I'm not successful here, I will make other attempts on other legislation as it goes. And with that, I'd again ask we return to second reading.
Is there a debate? Are you ready for the question? Call has been satisfied. Representative Brown?
Speaker, no member of your caucus rose to debate the matter. I'm not quite sure what your position or your caucus position is on this issue. And it's not clear to me that if you refuse with a majority of the House to go back to second reading, that you may necessarily be opposed to extending the funding for the Capital 82 operation. Mr. Speaker, I made a comment on debate earlier today that I think applies to this motion. I hope it is not your intention to make it difficult for the public to find out what we're really doing down here. Mr. Speaker.
State your point, Representative Metcalf.
Speaker, we're debating the subject of whether or not to return to second reading for the adoption of a specific amendment.
Speaker, people who have good attention spans and think in paragraphs sometimes wait to find out whether debate is germane.
Mr. Speaker, may I continue?
On the point,
Representative Brown,